trouble, see, I'm home.
Hey, hi guys. Welcome back to Having a Ball podcast. Today is a special, different, one of those, you know, one of our favorite kind of episodes that we do, because we do our rundown of episodes still living rent-free in season two. We have not even touched season three just yet, but today we're doing an interview with the author of AKA Lucy and Sarah Royal. Thank you for joining us, Sarah.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited.
Yeah. I love when we have, I mean, we have heard and read the story of Lucille Ball for ages, and we can retell it, and we've heard different varieties of accounts of her childhood, her teenage years, how she came to be, people who've encountered her, and we will have a lifetime of stories anyway. So just when I started reading some of it, I think Lucy probably got more of it, but it's just so fascinating the way you broke this down. So I'd love to get into that. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, absolutely. And thanks for that compliment. You know, I think that what's interesting is people are like, well, there's plenty of books about Lucy. What are you doing? You know, to take a little bit of a different tactic, you know, in different direction with presenting a biography too, and a visual biography at that. So I'm excited to chat about what you liked about it.
Okay. But yeah, the first question needs to be, when did your love for Lucy start?
Well, I have a pretty like classic story for people my generation. I'm born in the early 80s, and my grandmother, who watched me when I was little, introduced me to reruns. So she was, you know, and it was so appropriate, right, watching a black and white television show at my grandparents' house. Just like, oh, this is what it is. It's an old show. But absolutely introduced to Lucy the Goofball, Lucy the Clown early on, you know, in sort of my just experience, and also being a woman and also being a funny woman at that, I'd like to say, and enjoying being, you know, enjoying comedy, enjoying humor, and also growing up in a time where it was very much like, women aren't funny, and all these like terrible, you know, like Joker comedians that unfortunately still kind of exist in a lot of forms today, and definitely did exist in Lucy's time. She's always sort of been there as this reminder of like, what the heck are you talking about? You know, so she's always had this, you know, special place in my heart. And I think that through this project, you know, I learned so much more about how much of an amazing human being she was, apart from just all the, you know, the entertainer in her.
Yeah,
I think that's fascinating, because I think Lucy and I, we've spoken just throughout our podcast life that we've existed these last 2 years, we've hit on not only the comedy, the actress, the comedian of it all, but the person, because as you've come to know, Sarah, is Lucy Ricardo and Lucille Ball, two vastly different people. And, you know, sometimes when you don't know the story behind it, it's hard to separate, and you don't really know the businesswoman from the wife, from the, you know, the child who was traumatized when she was, a youngin, to the one who fiercely worked her way through getting to I Love Lucy in her 40s, which blows your mind when you think about that age, right?
Because makes me think that, you know what, I've got some time, so. So I'm there, so much more than I am at my still, so I'm going to.
There's still hope for all of us yet, okay? Let's not write ourselves off.
I wanted to ask, you know, what made you want to write this book? Erica mentioned, you know, there are a lot of books. And I think yours is beautiful. So far, the most beautiful Lucy book that I've come across. This is going to sound really, really bad, maybe, but I'm a nerd, so I promise it comes from a place of love. But I said, it reminds me of like a school textbook, when you would get it at the beginning of the year and you were excited about the subject material. So you were excited about the book. You know what I'm saying?
I love it. Like, absolutely.
You want to get into it. And so it was really cool. I just didn't want you to feel bad that I said it was kind of like a
Well, luckily I love school. I also am a nerd. But I see what you mean, because I really enjoy the fact that it doesn't have a dust jacket, that it's just the hard cover in and of itself. And there is a bit of that sort of like shiny sparkle in some of the coloring on it. So the book was designed.
The cover is beautiful.
Yeah, all the cover, the interiors, everything was done by Tim Palin Designs. He's an amazing illustrator, art director. So he deserves all that credit. But there is that sheen that I do remember certain textbooks having, like, you know, like a little panel of glitter with their horrific clip art, which is much different from the Lucy book. But but it is funny because people have commented, it's like, it looks like a coffee table book. It looks so visually stunning that you think you're going to open it and it's going to be full color glossy photographs. But then in fact, I wrote a heck of a lot of text in there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, going back to why I wanted to write it, I think that, you know, this time right now, as you all know, with your podcast in recent years and the Turner Classic Movies Plot Thickens podcast and Lucy and Desi by Amy Poehler and Being the Ricardos by Aaron Sorkin. I mean, there's a whole sort of resurgence and recognizing how much Lucy has sort of created the, not only the television, but just the comedy sphere that we live in today. Also, you know, opening of the National Comedy Center in Jamestown, there's so much there. And it was, you know, there hasn't been a biography that has been a little more sort of vignette style and sort of in that visual way. There's a few charts in there. There's some breakdowns that kind of break up different chapters. There's a chapter solely focused on her kids, solely focused on her relationship with Desi, solely focused on feminism, or what you were talking about earlier, where you were saying Lucy Ricardo versus Lucille Ball in real life, right?
I like
and
that.
Yeah, or and it's, I think,
the moment in time of the Red Scare. To me, that was always a fascinating part of how her career was so threatened, you know, and you hit on that, you know. I love that you broke it down in sections of her life and not just one swoop. But so if you wanted to learn about that moment in her career and Desi's life, go there. And to me, I have very little patience when it comes to books, which is why audiobooks for me work. In fact, I did look up to see if you had an audiobook version, just because I like to simultaneously do things as I'm reading or listening. But the way you broke down the timeline of years and life events and career events and all of that, to me, that was appreciative, because I it becomes a jumble of words. So maybe, you know, for someone like me, like that, that's what I loved about your story. But my question to you was, how did you get Amy Poehler to do the forward? I mean,
well, I'd love to say that, you know, I ran into her at a dive bar and we sat and had a whiskey together talking about Lucy. Yeah. As one does. Yes. That, I just keep repeating that to manifest it, that Amy and I are going to hang out over a whiskey. You know, this book through my editor. So my editor actually wrote her own Lucy book, Lucy at the Movies, many years ago, and had stayed connected with the estate of Lucy and Desi, who wonderfully authorized this book, you know, in the sort of official sanction. And because, you know, Amy had worked so closely with the estate for her documentary, we basically, you know, passed it to the estate saying, would you talk to Amy and see if she likes this? We gave her the manuscript before the book was even visually designed, which was really cool. So she read it over and said, okay, that sounds great, which is really cool. So she was an amazing get, because she also understands the Lucy, the human part of it that we were trying to come across. And I think you were saying before of like the, you know, visual elements and, you know, again, audio, you know, talk to my publisher. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have an audiobook soon. But the visual elements, I think, is a lot of different people process information that way too. And it's not that it isn't a biography. You certainly can read it chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, like a traditional one, but a lot of people are intimidated by just seeing that chunky wall of text. And this way you can skip around if you choose to. And it's just a more accessible experience, I think.
Yeah. And I, again, what I appreciated was the way you broke it down that way. And I think with the last, like we spoke to Keith Thibodeau, and I think Lucy also has a potential meeting in the future for a writing of her own. And I also interviewed this reporter. And to me, the word I kept using over and over was resurgence. Lucille Ball has been gone for a long time. I Love Lucy, the taping of it has been done for ages and ages. And it will never die. We all will. This show will not. And so the resurgence of, was it 2021 or 22? The show, the documentary, the movie, the books. It's like, it just hit us, not to us, the Lucy avid, just lovers, consumers, it never goes away, but the wave right. kind of was there in 2022. And so is that where you kind of had the, this is where I, you know, jump on the, on writing the book that I finally did, or did you have this already for a couple of years?
No, I think it's kind of, you know, I mean, a lot of thanks again go to my editor, because she really thought there was an appetite for a more visual book like this, that's yeah. presented in that way. And again, like you said, the resurgence of just making her accessible to new audiences, I think is really great. There's still, you know, there's younger and younger Lucy fans every day. And that's mm-hmm. not, you know, it's not an accident. The show's there. The show's always there. I mean, you know, by the time I watched it, it was several decades old, but I also right. feel like I grew up with it. Right. So I feel like everybody has that experience. So absolutely, you know, the idea, the nugget was there, but then it came to fruition sort of in that wave of things, you know, after the movie, after the documentary. So, and here we are, which is great. So 2021, 2022, and now 2023, aka Lucy.
Yeah. And doing this book, did you learn something that you were just like, that blew your mind, that you, a detail? Because a lot of this stuff is stuff that we've known, and I say we, just people who are interested in, you know, yes. just your average Lucy, I love Lucy watcher. But is there something that just like you learned that just blew your mind that you didn't know, even though you thought you knew so much?
Yeah, I think a lot of the anecdotes, like digging really deep into quotes about her work ethic, were fascinating to me, because, you know, he knew she was a hard worker, but I guess I didn't know the extent to sort of her impact on other people that she was acting with. And, you know, I mean, a lot of this is also like, you know, thinking of being the Ricardos or other, you know, like that movie focuses really hard on that side, right? Like, this is the process. I'm not naturally mm-hmm. funny. And that, I think, was a choice, because that isn't something that's well known about her. And you said before, you know, some people get Lucy Ricardo and Lucille Ball confused, but you also can get confused that, oh, I see Lucille Ball acting in this way. She must be a naturally funny, goofy person, very right. lighthearted. And that's not the case. And I think, particularly quotes from Jess Oppenheimer, where he's basically like, if you sat down at that first table read, you'd say, fire everybody but the redhead. I mean, I'm sorry, fire, keep everyone but the redhead, fire her. Yeah. Because it's just like, she just couldn't grasp it in that same way until she had taken it to the mat, as he said. And I just thought that was so interesting. It's so interesting to learn about a comedian who, you know, by her own admission, is like, I'm not very funny. And like, actually mean it, you know, especially when yeah. you see people's personas on talk shows and things. And of course, she, you know, she is funny in her own way, but not in the way that her characters were designed. And that was really fascinating to me. Also, the going deeper into like her vulnerability, I think, as a human. And, you know, you mentioned the traumas that she had gone through, of course, and just how much you can really draw those lines from early events of her childhood to everything that's happened to her since, including when she was the biggest star in the world and could barely believe it herself.
Yeah. And we've also hit on the impact of, if it weren't for, now the credit is all her because she's doing the work, but of course you have behind her the writers, but also Desi. Desi yeah. sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, which sometimes I like to bring up just because,
of course.
I mean, you spoke of reruns that you watch. The reason we have them is because of Desi, you
100%.
Know, and people don't understand what that meant for the history of television. And, you know, she kind of, when she took the reins of Desi Lu Productions, she kind of felt what he felt. Cause she just kind of like, I'll perform, I'll leave, go back and try and be a mom, which is, you know, ironically what she wanted to do and couldn't. And then when she took over the reins of Desi Lu Productions, she became this whole other person, which I think gave a different image to people of what, who she was. But this is like a whole other place for her that she didn't want to do.
Right.
Right.
And yeah,
kind of run the place.
We talked about, I know we've talked about this before, is that definitely in that time. And I mean, even still, you know, powerful women in power and, that are getting things done, they're often labeled, you know, as bossy, as confrontational, as difficult to work with, you know. But, you know, she was, like you said, filling a role that she had to, and mm-hmm. she was doing what she needed to get done, and she was doing it really, really well. It just wasn't what a typical female at that time was doing. And so,
exactly.
Yeah.
She, I think what's interesting is that I quote Tony Randall, you know, from The Odd Couple in my book, and he was discussing how some people, you know, especially collaborators, a lot of guest stars, as you all well know, you know, when have some dust ups, shall we say, when encountering Lucy saying, no, we're going to rehearse till we get this right. And they're like, can't we just go have a drink? Come on. And Tony Randall had a comment of just like, you know, behind the scenes and TV movies, et cetera, and these artistic endeavors, like, yeah, it's really annoying when somebody is always harping on do it exactly this way. He goes, except when they're right, it just saves everyone a hell of a lot of time. And guess what? Yeah. Lucy was always right. Like it's really refreshing to have, like, I live in New York. I'm from New Jersey. I'm from the East Coast, and I have visited the West Coast and other places in the country and have been definitely seen as like pushy and, you know, bossy. And like, I've certainly been called that. Part of it is the feminism, the misogynistic piece, really, the fact that I am a female being assertive. However, it's also like a style. And I think Lucy had that style too. So, you know, people are really taken aback. Like, okay. Not only are you not Lucy Ricardo, but like, what is happening here? Like, you're pushing us into this. But again, she was efficient, and she wanted to make the best product possible, and she demanded the exact same, you know, for lack of a better term, perfectionism from everyone who she worked with, which I think is, there's no apology needed.
To perfect her craft, she learned from the men. She would take, you know, the Buster Keatons of the world and perfect her craft that way. So the irony is that she's learning this perfectionist style from the men that she, you know, would watch in vaudeville and all the other films. And so it's, you know, but taken from somebody like that, like a Red Skelton or a Buster Keaton, it was accepted coming from Lucille Ball, who at the time was, you know, even she was given the image of housewife. Ironically, that's what she was playing, not what she was doing. And so it was a lot to handle then, you know, for a woman to kind of be pushing. And in like the movie Being the Ricardos, I think it showed a scene where she wanted to come back at 3 a.m. and sort of redo the scene. It wasn't landing right. And though some of it may be creative liberties or maybe a little exaggerated, the feeling is that she wanted to make sure, I'm going to take funny seriously. We're going to make this funny. And then, but with a serious face on, and she's on, she's a clown, she's off, she's serious. And it just works that way, you know? And I think that's what comes across in your book, that you show that that's the two different people that you equally love. You just don't know the other one, the serious one.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's like making that sort of clear, that they're both incredible humans, like the fictional character creation as well as the real life woman. And, you know, there are similarities too. There's a fun chart at that chapter you're talking about that talks about Lucy Ricardo versus Lucille Ball. And there's overlaps of things that they share, and then overlap, you know, like the complete like opposite Venn diagram. Like where they're in the two polar opposite corners of just how they approach life, right? Or situations. So, which is all the more powerful to like see that she was able to sort of lose herself in this character through that perfectionism to basically convince audiences that this was just her.
Yeah. And are you getting a lot of, how do you say, excitement from, other than us, the crazy Lucy community, are you getting a lot of like outside excitement from a book like this? I'm just curious how people still take I Love Lucy when they hear a new book, you know, or is it just kind of like,
well, I think it's interesting, right? There's like the three circles, which is sort of like you guys, which is the sort of the Lucy crew. So everyone from, you know, like the Lucy Lounge and, you know, Shelley Zimmerman loves Broadway and Paper Moon loves Lucy, all the crew, right? I mean, I couldn't ask for a better. Say again.
I said, I appreciate that we've made our way into the crew.
You are, part of the crew. You are, don't worry. But I think it's been incredible for me because like you all are the ones that I like, I take that to heart. Like if you all enjoy the book and the presentation, also having known the core information in the, you know, at the beginning, then that's a huge win. So I consider the book a success based on sort of the Lucy crew. But then there's, you know, there's critics, and then there's other folks who are just Lucy fans, or folks who maybe, you know, are just like, yeah, the redhead, or I've heard of Lucy, or like, yeah, that old black and white TV show. It's kind of funny. My grandma used to watch it, right? Like all those types of folks. And I think from both camps, like, you know, we got great reviews from Kirkus, and, you know, saw some, like, there was excerpts on Katie Couric Media. Like there's some definitely like some attention being given to it, which is exciting. And then everyone, I mean, it's pretty early to tell because the book just came out, but the general public, as it were, I've had so many people be like, oh my God, not only for me, like, you don't even know, like, I am a huge Lucy fan. Like people I've known for years are like, really? Oh my gosh. Wow. It's great. Or they say, oh my God, my brother is, or oh my God, my, you know, I'm going to get this from my grandma. I'm going to get this from my mom. Like it's really awesome to see. Right. Because again,
everyone
like,
knows a Lucy fan.
Everyone knows a Lucy fan.
No one.
Exactly. Exactly. I've never heard anybody be like, nah, not really my thing, or I've never heard of her or anything like that. Right. It's exciting. So I'm excited to see what those folks get out of it too. And I bet the sort of more casual Lucy fans will actually learn a lot.
Yeah. And one thing you'll see, and I'm sure you've come across this, is because we did, when we first started the podcast a couple of years ago, is Lucy historians. Oh, they will tell you if you have a detail wrong. Because I mean, even down to a year or a date, we got those emails where it was not 1935, but 1934, you know, that type of thing. But, you know, and to me, that's fascinating to know that there's so many, because you don't have that for other shows or other figures. I mean, sure, you have them for Elvis. I'm sure there's a whole other, you know, genre of people there, maybe the Marilyn Monroe's of the world, right? But the I Love Lucy world, or the Lucille Ball world, is so unique. I mean, I it's hard to explain unless you're in it, or unless you know it very well. But that's what I appreciate from something like this, because you give exact dates, you give moments in time that you can kind of picture. I mean, we've seen different various movies on television. There's a movie called, I think it was just called Lucy, where, York?
The drama, York, the dramatization Lucy, yes. That was like in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, yes, no, Rachel York, I think was her name.
Yes.
And that was one of my favorite ones that played back then. And, you know, that film for me kind of made me feel like you could be in her childhood, like when she had the trauma and she was growing up and all of that. So I know that being the Ricardos kind of was more of a adult when they were in their, you know, successes and all of that. So it's neat to see all the different variations, but you did hit that from in your book, all the different stages. What was your favorite part to kind of jump into? What facet of her life was your favorite?
You mean of her life?
Yeah.
I mean, they're all fascinating. I think one of the amazing pieces, like, of this project to me, it was that I never got bored with any of the information. Yeah. I didn't think I would get bored necessarily, but I did think it would feel like a job sometimes, especially with getting dates right or timelines and what have you. And it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It was really incredible from start to finish. But I think, like, if I had to pick something, it would probably be like the later years, like after her, you know, especially after Here's Lucy, even, right, where she was getting into MAME talk show circuit, you know, revisiting just sort of like what life means without like an active television series, or, you know, delving into life with Lucy and all those times. I think also in that was that vulnerability piece I talked about earlier, where like she's the biggest star and she can basically do no wrong. And she's still kind of surprised when everybody's like standing ovation at talk shows she's on, or, you know, like there's still a lot of surprise. She's really humble. And I think, but it's completely earnest too. Like she's shocked when, you know, Michael Stern, her friend, you know, he wrote a book and he was talking about the Queen Elizabeth piece where he went to London and he like, Lucy's like, tell the queen I said hi, ha ha ha. And then he actually saw the queen and like yelled to her, like, I work for Lucille Ball. She says to say hello. And the queen's like, oh my God, I love Lucy. Tell her hi. And he comes back and Lucy's like, what are you talking about? The queen of England I mean, it's for real though, for real, right? Right. But she like makes this flippant remark, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I told her. She says hi." So yeah, there's so many little fascinating stories like that, and I think, you know, especially with her, you know, and her marriage to Gary, and just like what her second, the sort of like second half of her life looked right. like, is very different from the first half. Maybe not half, but second, you know, third and fourth quarters.
Quarters of her life. Yeah, it is. And people forget that, even though that marriage and that life was a lot longer than the previous.
Yes, exactly.
The person's exactly. the one that made the impact for obvious reasons. You know, I mean, Gary wasn't, you know, co-starring in a TV yeah. show.
You don't have a picture of Gary on your wall.
No.
No offense, that would be Gary.
Funny, though. Yeah. You know, no offense, Gary. You're right, I don't. That's funny. But, and you're right. It's the second portion or three quarters of her life was a little slower. And you know, to me, I think that was a more vulnerable part. I think she wanted to do a more dramatic part, maybe slow down a bit, because I'm sure it got exhausting to be Lucy all the time. I mean, the AKA Lucy was because Lucy was the character. Sure, that was a shortened version of her name, but it was also somebody else.
Exactly.
So is that how it came about? Let me just ask you that. The AKA Lucy.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, you nailed it. It's like that. This is the person that is known as just Lucy. If you said Lucy, people's minds are going to go to Lucille Ball. But she did have that, you know, she played a character and she was a person separate. It was, you know, that parasocial relationship people have. Like, if I know her. It's Lucy. It's Lucy. And it's not actually her. I mean, I think what's interesting, though, is like they're. She also was concerned that like she wasn't sort of bringing that character in, like when she did the movie Yours, Mine and Ours, like she asked the director to like make sure was I playing Lucy in that, like did I you know, Lucy the character, and to make sure that I'm actually like separating, you know, my comedy, because she's been that character for so long in all of its incarnations. So
long trailer is like one long I Love Lucy episode.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
View of that, and that's what we felt like it was, you know, but she can't help it. I mean, she couldn't help it. Totally. You know, that's totally natural.
You got to give the people what they want.
Yeah, that's true, and it worked for a long time, and it still works. You know, I think people are still trying to hit that level of comedy, and I think you had hit the beginning of the book was to me, I didn't even know this part, that even years later, it was generating $20 million a year of just reruns, and you're talking a couple of decades ago. I mean, this is not, you know,
that's just
now.
I Love Lucy. That's not all the years of reruns for the Lucy show and Here's Lucy. I mean, even when Here's Lucy ended, it couldn't go into syndication right away because there were already two shows in syndication from Lucy. Like, it was too much, you know?
Lucy. Yeah.
And as you all know, you know, like later in her life too, in those later years, like people sort of expected that she was going to retire and like sit around on her money. And, you know, I mean, to be completely honest, that's probably what I would do. I'd take like the Desi approach and buy a boat and like just relax, you know. But but part of it was because they were like, oh, you're already like, they basically felt like she was still acting and active because she was always on TV. Even though those shows were filmed so long ago, she was always on TV. And that was the remark I said, you know, everybody feels like they grew up with Lucy because she's been on and like all of the still making millions of dollars. And that's just the airing. That's just the broadcasting, not to mention the merchandise and everything else. Right. So, yeah,
there's so much there. I mean, we could hit on so many different branches of that Lucy tree. I mean, the Desi portions, you know, the second parts of her television career, the movies, the B movies, the forgettable ones towards the end. And then of course the last one should Broadway. I mean, there's just so much. And here in California, there's so many different landmarks for, you know, that have Lucy, that are touched by Lucy, over where you are, of course. I'm sure you visited a few of them there, and it's a lot. And I'm sure, like I said, other groups like the Elf's groups and things like that, that's all I can think of, that are just as big, you know, have the same sort of feel, that excitement for the fans or people who appreciate the work. I mean, I appreciate the person, the Lucille Ball person. I think I've always felt that she has fascinated me because there's nobody that's ever been like her, you know, for a variety of reasons. But the character itself, of course, still hits. And I think a lot of people, kids can gravitate to that even now. I think that's
Yes.
why there's so much to it.
There's a goofiness to that character that is accessible for kids, right? There's the common sense media. Yeah, the physical comedy of it.
I was gonna say my son is at the age where he is starting to really appreciate physical comedy. So even though he doesn't fully understand what's going on, he can understand when, you know, a big loaf of bread comes
Yeah.
pops out of an oven.
That's
Oven and
probably the most
supposed
classic one. I love
to be
it.
on there.
Yeah.
Or when chicken flies into the air, you know, and or Abbott and Costello were starting to get into that because you can understand the physical, and she did that so well. That's one of the things we talked about is that, you know, and so even though, you know, kids maybe can't fully understand the intricate, more intricate parts of the comedy yet, they can understand the physical parts, and that's what's really great for that too.
Yeah,
That's
Common
also
Sense Media is
showed
that
it.
site with the kids that kids can have, like our adults can have ratings of like, can I show this to my kid? Is there violence? Is there this? And they have like little kid reviews. And it's very cute. There's one and I quote in my book where some kid's like, Lucy's very funny, but she's not a good role model, you know, like very adorable accessibility. And then, you know, and then you get older and you can understand the storylines and what they're talking about and the aspirations and so forth. So it's very cool.
Well, it's the kind of show that you can leave your kids, leave the room, and you know that there's not going to be a double speak that will be caught on, or you know, something that's
Yeah.
inappropriate or something like that. And like you said, you don't even have to understand. Again, I think you hit on this here. The language, you don't even have to understand the language, even though this has been dubbed in more language. It's playing somewhere, like they say, at any given moment, somewhere. And it's been dubbed in so many languages, which happens to a lot of shows, but it doesn't live on like this. And the you know, you're watching a drama, another sort of comedy show, you have to listen to kind of catch the comedy, where here her face is half the acting, her expressions are half the acting, and her physical comedy is again another part of the acting. So I think that's another thing. You can watch it on mute and still be, you know,
Yeah,
entertained by her. So I think that's a
exactly.
talent in itself.
Well, and it's also taught, I mean, you know, without dubbing, like it's taught so many people English. There's a lot of just people sort of in the zeitgeist that are like, yeah, not only was it always on, but it was a very like simple, fun show to watch. And it always had these domestic storylines. So it's actually a really great show to learn English because they're talking about paying rent and going to the grocery store and making phone calls and dealing with neighbors, you know, like domestic disputes and things like that. It's really kind of fascinating, you know, how it is just that sort of everyday kind of case study that people could access.
What's interesting is that when we what we do is we break down every episode and kind of, you know, do a bloopers, fun facts, trivia, that type of thing. But also we hit on the differences of the times that are so evident from the 1950s to obviously today, certain
Yeah.
things that wouldn't go, but yet it's still accepted. Like, you know, we'll watch Desi Spank Lucy, and it's like, of course, that's not acceptable today, but we
No.
understand that it's something that was kind of comical back then. Today, it's like, you know, it wouldn't air,
Yeah.
you know, realistically. But yeah, it's interesting to watch the different time eras from then to now.
Yeah. Fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, like any old television show, it's gonna be a lot of moments where you're like, okay, that doesn't quite pass muster. But what's fascinating is it's not anything that is super cringeworthy in a lot of ways. Like there are a few, but overall, there is this spirit of even though the whole premise is that like Lucy's quote unquote just a housewife and wants more out of her life, and Ricky says no, that there's an undercurrent of actual love there, and that there is just the desire to, you know, Ricky's coming at it from the point of view of like, I just want to have a regular life. Like, I don't even like show business that much. Like, I do, but this is the way I know how to make a living. And, you know, I talk about this in the book too, and quote at length this scholar, Lori Landay. I'm sure you've heard of her, read her little I Love Lucy book, but she talks a lot about the how funny it is that there's this whole like Lucy can't be in show business, even though Lucille Ball is in show business, right? Like there's that same dichotomy we're talking about.
Called Mr. Ball from time to time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, right. So in a certain sense, it is this sort of fantasy world that we all now looking back pretend that that's how it was for everybody, when in fact there was no, you know, this was all post-war, right? I Love Lucy was post-war. This wasn't like we've sort of created this with the Waltons and, you know, like the I Love Lucy and like the, you know, just like painting that nostalgia picture of like, oh, that's what it was. Not the women didn't work anymore. And you're like, no, they actually didn't stop working after World War II. Like it was, we were all, you know, we were out there. So Lucy was not wrong to want to have a little bit more fun in her life outside the home. But yeah, it's you can explain those things to older children, certainly, but there isn't like a whole, like, I don't want you to even touch this storyline. I think there's a lot there that you can explain that it's in context, but then there's still just like real situations and real conflicts that, you know, that is always the undercurrent of the show. However absurd it gets, there's a baseline of reality. And that was by design. I think it's so fascinating. That's why it's lasted so long. It's not so wildly unbelievable.
Right. There's not a lot of things that couldn't happen because a lot of people still live in a traditional way. You know, and they like it purposely. So, you know, you can identify with that. Of course, some things are exaggerated. You got your loaf of bread, you got her sneaking into shows, you know, that's just for our entertainment. But like you said, the undercurrent is to kind of associate with the real people who are watching it at the time. You know, you have to remember that these shows are being targeted to certain specific audiences. They didn't know it was going to last at 2023. And we'd be talking on a podcast about
for
it.
Right? My gosh.
It's a lot. But
Lucy would be blown away.
Yeah, she really would. What is a podcast? But what would you like that we haven't hit on from your book in particular that you would like people to know about it?
That's a great question. I think we talked about a lot of different things. I think it's more of just like what we were saying in the beginning of that. It's still a pretty meaty biography, you know, like there's a lot of words in there if that's your thing. There's going to be a lot of things that you discover, a lot of first, you know, like quotes from people that you'll recognize, some you won't, but also it is very visual. There's a lot of beautiful photographs in there. There's a lot of different styles of chapters, like I Love Lucy, like moments dissected and talking about the firsts of television that Desi was largely responsible for, a chart and, you know, sort of dissections of why she's so funny, really. And so there's like playfulness. So I think it's really cool. I think that is, again, the differentiating factor of this book primarily, is that it's just like set up in a different kind of way. So it's sort of like, you know, it leaves it open for anybody who just wants to sort of poke around. Like my husband, he's like, I love you, but I probably won't read this book all the way through because it takes him forever to like really read the book, you know, like from front to back cover. Yeah. But also for people who love those chapter one, chapter two, chapter three biographies, right? Those bricks that you can get at, you know, next to your John Grisham's in the airport. There's a lot of info in there. So it was just been a dream to like be let into her world for just a little bit to get so much info sort of into my own brain and into my own heart, and like a really understanding who she was as a person and what she gave to us all.
How long did it take you to write?
Great question. It took 4 months of like crushing it every single day, like, you know, spending time. But I also did it over my maternity leave with my second child. So I talk about, I talk about, it's old hat. It's old hat with
Lucy
the second
would
one.
I
literally talk about that in my acknowledgments. Like, read the acknowledgement chapter. I literally say, it's like, I got this project when I was 6 months pregnant. And I was like, well, I'm going to do it. It was just it smacked of, you know, Lucy waiting 10 years to have a kid and to have a hit TV show and a project with her husband. And all of a sudden it came in the next, you know, like in 7 weeks of each other. It's like crazy. It was very poetic. Yeah. It was poetic. It was really poetic to like have that experience and that like connection with her.
appreciate what all those things were juggling. Yeah. That one. I mean, that's really that's a lot.
Totally. Yeah. I will say though, Lucy, that there, you know, I did research prior to that. So like that was not 4 months writing and research. That was strict writing. Editing process came a little after, research and reading came before. Definitely was reading. I think, was it the old Charles biography? I was trying to remember which book I was reading when I was in labor. But I'm trying to remember if it was the Catherine by, no, maybe it was Desi Lu, I forget. But either way, again, so many fabulous books out there, right? So many fabulous recordings and movies and radio shows and obviously TV episodes and talk show appearances and interviews with writers and backstage folks and other actors talking about Lucy. I mean, there's a lot out there. There's so much. You know, of course, from Lucy Arnaz and Desi Jr. And they've done such an amazing job sort of like shepherding their parents' legacy, you know, these past couple of years. So I think it's, you know, there's a lot to be said, a lot to pick through, a lot that I sort of had to leave on the cutting room floor, as it were. But yeah, it was really exciting.
And then Turner Classic Movies is like, oh,
yeah,
we're not done yet. Here's a podcast, you know, or a podcast.
Totally. Oh my gosh.
Did in the 70s with Dean Martin and everybody else. And so,
hold on. Great. Just a little project. And you're like, what? These are the biggest stars in the world.
When you listen to her do it, it's quite literally a podcast. And we did reviews on each episode on our podcast. And it's so those conversations, she sounds so down to earth, she sounds so friendly and so loving, and I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people around her, I mean, that's what you got, the generosity, the friendship, the love that she gave, you know, radiated along with the assertiveness and the strength and all of that she had to have to run this thing. But it if you really want to know what she was really like, and you know, is that, what was it? Let's talk to Lucy.
Let's talk to Lucy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
somebody the other day said to me, they were like, man, I think Lucy would have been really good on a podcast. I was like, funny you should say that, because she literally had one that they made into a podcast.
that's a lot. It's a lot. I mean, we've just scratched the surface, but where can they A, see you or hear you next, you know, your appearances, and then B, where do they find your book?
I think, you know, so I'm not sure when this is going to air, but
next week
on October 17th I will be in Los Angeles at Book Soup at 7 p.m with Jim Colucci, and on October 19th I will be in Portland, Oregon at Rose City Book Pub with author Martha Grover, and on the, let me just double check my dates here. On the 27th, I'll actually be at the Lucy Lounge's Instagram page, Instagram Live interview at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So that will be really exciting. And who knows? There might be more. There might be more events later. But but you can buy, you know, AK Lucy, The Dynamic and Determined Life of Lucille Ball, with a fun forward by Amy Poehler, by me, Sarah Royal, at anywhere that, you know, sells books. So I, of course, prefer that anybody, when possible, can support their local independent bookshop. You could also go to bookshop.org and support local independent bookshops if you don't have one accessible, and you can use an online site, but really anywhere. And it's exciting. And you'll, as you mentioned before, like the cover is a beautiful visual design by Tim Palin, and it will be striking as soon as you see it. You'll know you have the right book.
It's beautiful. It's big. It's heavy. It's if you're excited about Lucy content, definitely this book has a lot of it.
Was this your first book / do you think it's going to be your last book? Like, are you?
I'm an author writer, you know, so this is my first biography for sure. Okay. I have done independent publishing for a little bit, and I've done some zines. I've done, you know, like indie publishers, like I said, but also novelty books. I have a very funny creative cursing flip book, which is quite lewd. So if you can handle lewd, you could put it next to, you could put it next to this Lucy textbook on your coffee table. But no, first biography. And I, you know, there's definitely more projects that I'm sort of thinking about. So I, you know, I have this co-host, I co-host a podcast called Enough Wicker, Intellectualizing the Golden Girls, where, you know, similar style, we do episode by episode dissecting things in sort of a scholarly manner about the show.
Big
surprise that a lot of the lines come directly you know, from Lucy, and they were contemporaries of each other, actress wise. And but yeah, but I think, you know, so I'm definitely interested, you know, in women in comedy and scholarship in that regard. So I think, you know, there's probably more projects on the horizon, but I will not be having any more children, so I'll have to find some more time to write it.
More biography.
Yeah,
I think there was a video that's been making the rounds where I think it's Betty White, and they're playing passwords, and they buzz Lucy, and she goes, "Don't buzz, God, so... legend."
Yes, it's so great. There's so many great overlap stories for all those ladies.
AKA Lucy. What I do love is the determined life. I know it's dynamic and determined, but determined is very much a description of who Lucy Ball was. So I do love that it's in the title by Sarah Royal. Thank you so much for being part of our podcast and, you know, making the time to schedule with us and chatting with us about your book.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. The pleasure's all mine. Like I said, you're the Lucy crew. You know, I love your podcast. I love what you're doing with it. So thank you so much for letting me come on. Hopefully it won't be the last time.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, thank you.
To have you on just like as a guest.
A commentator.
Commentator, yeah. Sometimes you can do that. We'll just
Once you dive into the third season, we'll give you a call.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Having a Ball Podcast.
You can find us everywhere. We are on Having a Ball Pod on Instagram, Having a Ball Pod on Twitter. We are on Having a Ball Podcast on Facebook and Having a Ball Podcast on YouTube. And of course, if you want to send us any emails, comments, recommendations, Having a Ball Podcast at gmail.com. Thank you guys. Bye. Bye-bye.